Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
Hi, everyone.
Bad news, you're not in charge anymore. We voted you out.
All right.
This is a coup.
Tim's our new leader.
Yep.
Start the show, then.
All right. No, you do it. I'm telling you to do it, because I'm in charge.
You insist. Pernell, turn off speakerphone.
Uh-oh. Every time.
It sounds like Pernell's at the arcade.
I am. I mean, my house is practically an arcade these days, so.
True.
Mine literally is. I have an arcade machine now.
I know, that's so awesome.
What machine?
It's the Ms. Pac-Man one from Arcade 1-Up.
Oh, nice. Ms. Pac-Man is probably one of the most replayed arcade games I can think of in my lifespan. Like, I mean, I have fond memories of many, but I generally only find myself going back to Ms. Pac-Man for high scores at arcades.
Yeah, yeah. I could talk about it on the show if you like, if we're not doing anything yet.
He's recording right now, and if he's not, what's he doing?
It is recording. What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I'm your host, Joe. Tim took over. Tim, what's going on tonight?
What is going on tonight is we are going to do some reviews. Brooke isn't here, so this episode sucks. Sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah,
fair.
But yeah, we got some reviews coming in a bit. But this is the part of the show where we just kind of shoot the shit for a little bit, and Pernell is going to go off on a tangent.
Oh, no tangents.
Oh, okay. No tangent. Oh, okay. All right. Pernell says there's no tangents. On this particular evening.
That's a fucking lie.
Yeah, this is going to be a really short fucking episode. All right, so something fresh I want to bitch about. Because I was... Dude, fucking, like, what is up with video games where the text is super tiny and there is no option for making it bigger?
For real. I hate that shit.
Dude, the UI, I was just, spoiler alert, I'm reviewing, Midnight Suns for next week, and I just started playing it, and, like, you know, no comment, I just kind of got through the tutorial, so, you know, I'm not really commenting on the gameplay or any of that shit, but motherfucker, the UI is so small!
Oh, man.
There's like a tooltip on it, because it's, like, card-based combat, there's, like, a tooltip on a card that, like, it just, I could not read from my couch. The text is so small. The icon for ending your turn in the lower right is so small. What, like, who, like, you guys test these games on televisions, do you not?
I think a lot of studios forget to do that. They have their monitors in front of them, and they forget that a lot of people sit, you know, half a room away anymore.
Yeah, it's like, you gotta, it's something, yeah, I really appreciate about, like, Sony first party in particular. I know other studios have done this, but Sony's first party stuff jumps out to me because, like, when you start those games, they hit you with an array of accessibility options, including making the text big and changing the color. And I love it. It makes for a very comfortable couch gaming experience. But, you know, they are making games for the console. That is the experience first. You know, it will come to PC eventually, but, yeah, it just drives me up a wall. And if they haven't patched something in or announced they're patching something in, that's going to be the first thing I bitch about for that game next week.
There's something to look forward to, folks.
Consider yourself warned.
Bitching about this.
I would say that like I'm the host, but I'm not the host anymore.
No, you could still host. I just run it from behind the scenes.
See, just like in real America, he wants all the credit for none of the work.
Exactly. Some might say that no, people at home won't notice the difference.
Okay, every game code that comes in, I'm offering to you first.
Oh, God.
So you'll get every game offered first.
It's going to be, I'm going to send everyone
out. After the first day and a half, you're going to be like, stop fucking messaging me.
I'm going to send, you can just forward me the emails. Don't even ask. No, I'm going to send everyone out a pamphlet in the mail just explaining how they can become more Tim. We will all become Tim. Tim will become all.
Looking forward to my new Tim existence.
Yeah. Pernell, I did see that you did pick up the Midnight Suns.
I did indeed.
You're taking it back and keeping Callisto Protocol, right? That's what I got out of that post on the book.
Oh God, no. So I'm supportive of. I got to be supportive of Midnight Suns, though. Admittedly, if the game is bad, I'll still say it as such. But a friend of mine worked on it, so I was like, "Got to do the thing." Callisto Protocol, and honestly, I'm hoping that the game is good because I like Marvel stuff and all, but I wasn't like chomping at the bit to get that with a limited budget, you know.
Yeah.
But with Callisto Protocol was the one I was the more hopeful for because, you know, I love Dead Space and, you know, Pedigree and all that junk. But as I've come to learn over the last few years, I'm getting reminded regularly, Pedigree don't mean shit. Because apparently this game is not so great from more than a few sources. Enough so that I am fairly content with the idea of returning the copy to the store in favor of just waiting for a discount or not playing it at all.
Yeah, that seems sensible. And like the actual Dead Space remake is coming out in like what, like a few months?
Next month, apparently. Yeah. January. Next month?
I thought it was February. Is it January? Jeez.
Last thing I heard was like late January.
That one really, I feel like, snuck up.
But that's the thing though, too. Yeah, like
January 27th for that.
Wow. It lends a lot of, this whole situation with Callisto lends a lot of weight to, like, again, like the concept of the review process as a whole, because if the game is that bad, I don't want to be that guy that has to mentally justify my purchase because I already spent $70 on it. Like, I don't need that. Money ain't growing trees. This game apparently didn't churn well. And then now I'm like, man, I really hope these guys patch in, you know, a good game. And then I'm at the resting end. Meanwhile, and also, as you know, if you bought the game, you do all the work in the world, the labor to justify the purchase, because now you're on the hook for it. You spent green, and now you don't want to feel bad that you bought something, so you'll be like, yeah, it skips every once in a while, but that's part of the charm. Yeah, the controller freezes, but that's what makes the game special, you know?
I don't think I've ever defended glitches because, oh, that's part of the charm.
No, that's the thing. It's not about really being about the charm. It's just you being like, well, I paid money for this game. I can't return it. I'm stuck with it.
It ain't
doing too hot. It's like confirmation. It's like purchase bias or something like that. I'm probably missing the term. But
it's what you call a bias.
Nah.
Oh, yeah. There we go. That was good. That was fantastic. But yeah, you develop a bit of a bias towards your game. And you need to justify all the flaws to make yourself feel good about the fact that you didn't waste your money. You don't want to believe you threw your money in the trash.
Yeah, that was especially true, like, you know, harking back to the days of growing up in the 80s and 90s when, games are very accessible and easy to get in your hands nowadays. Many of them just fucking free. But, you know, back then it was like, oh, you got like a few NES or SNES games a year. And, you know, sometimes, you know, what you got as a gift was what you got. And it's like, well, I got to play it because it's what I have and it's new and I'm going to find the good in it. And then, you know, that might become a special game for you growing up. And then you look at it after you take off the rose tinted glasses and then you're like, oh, no.
One game for me in that regard is Amagon. Like, I talked to a friend of mine that wrote a podcast and they're like, I hate Amagon. Like, I love Amagon. I love that game as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
Because I owned it as a kid, and
that's
I
a perfect
beat it.
Example. Yeah, like that. And like I had Wampum. Like, that's a game like that.
How about the classic Star Voyager for the NES?
Oh my God, I was just about to say Star Voyager is the one exception because I got that as a gift and never believed it was anything but a boring piece of shit.
That was my first NES game.
I already.
Oh my God!
Yeah,
it's a wonder you kept playing video games at that point.
Yeah. I know.
I argue that Wampum actually is pretty good.
It's solid. Yeah.
Isn't that one of those games that's like worth like a couple hundred bucks on the NES for a fizz?
Oh, I'm sure it is. Maybe. Yeah. I think it is now. Let me see.
I think I sold it.
The funny part too is like I remember Nintendo Power made it look good. That's the one where you could transform into different animals.
Yeah, it was
a Mega Man-esque game. It was like a Journey to the West game that they reskinned as with Native American heritage, and then it has a sort of, you know, you beat a level and you get a new ability. So it had some cool stuff going on.
Yeah, you know, and
it could have been better.
Yeah, it's like $91. I'm seeing there's one for.
Oh, it came down then, which is good.
Yeah, it came down a bit, but. Yeah, I saw it for like $70 like 10 years ago, so it's kind of hovering around that rare but not sought after.
Is it possible it may be confusing it for another game? I could have sworn there was some game similar, at least Little in Samson? Theme or something. Little Samson, that's the one I was thinking. Oh, yeah,
that one was expensive.
I think that's the most expensive common NES game.
Yeah, that's not like stadium events or whatever.
Right, it's that. It's like a couple $1,000s now for a loose cart.
Fucking insane.
Yeah.
I was matched up for it on GooseX once, like 15 years ago, and I was like, please send it. Please send it, you idiot. Please send me that game. they didn't.
I've gotten some crazy shit through GooseX, man. That site used to be great for...
Hey, I got Earthbound from there.
Nice.
I got the Lunars from there.
Oh, like, wow.
With the full box sets. And, oh, it's so good.
Yeah. I got some great stuff from there.
I have those. I lucked into both of them in just separate times and places. Mm. But yeah, I have both of the full box. Well, I don't have the little galleon punching puppet.
No.
I still have that here, at least. I don't have the Alex puppet, but I have galleon. Just
an insane
Alex.
Pre-order bonus. My God, what?
Back when pre-order
bonuses
stuff.
Were worth a damn.
That thing was insane.
I mean, it drove the price of the game down enough without having that I got all the other stuff with it, and it was affordable. Nice. So, I mean, it was a good trade-off. I didn't need no puppet.
Speaking of stuff you got before Tim rudely interrupted you by throwing over the show, you were going to talk about your new arcade machine, weren't you?
Yeah. I finally at the sprightly young age of 40.
All right, that's enough time just, about that. No, I'm joking.
just got my first arcade machine at home. It's a tabletop head to head. It's the arcade one up Ms. Pac-Man table. So it's pretty cool. I got to assemble it and everything. And it's got 10 games on it. And it's kind of awesome.
I was eyeing up the Capcom version of the tabletop head-to-head games that had, like, what the fuck was on there? A bunch of Street Fighters were on there, a bunch of classic, like, Strider was on there, I think. I'm trying to find the table, and I can't.
I feel like, I feel like for, like, things like Street Fighter and stuff, I'd want, like, a whole cab. But, like, those old Namco games, like, I feel like those look good on a table. Like, just flat looking at it. But, I mean, it was Catherine's purchase. But, you know, I get to benefit from it. And one of the other game that she's tried so far is the Tower of Druaga. Because she is really fascinated by that one. Yeah.
That's a weird coincidence, too, because I asked he was playing that just earlier this week, though not so much the original game, but the Tales of Destiny version of it.
Oh, but, yeah.
Freaking
that game keeps showing up. It's also in Bat and Kaitos. There's a tribute to it in.
Oh, really?
There's this weird like world where everything's kind of topsy turvy, and you go into like this certain room and suddenly you're your character, but you're in a maze, and it's the look and the music of Tower of Druaga. So it's a really
sure
funny
I've
moment.
Seen you stream that.
Yeah. I had a lot of fun when I streamed that. That was when I was figuring out my GameCube thing.
So here's the thing. I've never played the original Tower of Druaga. Are the rules for the floors as dumb as they are in the Tales of Destiny rear version of where it's like go into room, walk into corner and stand there for 10 minutes and then the exit appears.
It has stupid stuff like that all throughout, but like for the most part it's walk through this maze and stick your sword out so you can defeat a slime or whatever and then collect the key and get to the door. Try to collect all the power-ups as you go through because you know it's like you can get the boots that make you walk twice as fast. That's real handy, and you know you can get other stuff too. It's all about like kind of exploring the maze, like, and the maze is randomly generated, or you know, it's a roguelike essentially. So, you know, the maze is different every time, and so the power ups have like kind of different locations sometimes. It's a fun game, but you know, it never made a splash over here. Probably because we never got an NES version of it over here. Mm-hmm. It took till. Actually, I'm trying to think. I think one of the Switch Namco collections has the NES, the Famicom game on it. I'm going to check that right quick. Anyways, yeah, it's a cool table. It's got like some other stuff that I like. I got to try Galaga, of course. Got to play Galaga. It's got Dig Dug and Dig Dug 2. I'd never played Dig Dug 2 outside of the NES cartridge. It's got Rolling Thunder. It's got like Rally X. One of the games that's actually on it that I had never even really, I never knew was Rompers. So that's on there too. And while it doesn't have the original Pac-Man, it does have Pac-Mania, which I argue is the best Pac-Man.
Oh, I love Pac-Mania. That's where freaking, what's that one Pac-Man? That's where that came from.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And
I adore it. So Pac-Park, that's what everyone calls it.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's a good one.
And then eventually the...
I discovered Pac-Mania by purchasing the black Tengen cart as like a young 20-year-old, and just I'd never heard of it. I was just like Pac-Mania. Cart.
Sega Channel for me. It was like I remember it was mentioned in like a magazine, game magazine back in the like early 90s, and I was just like, that's a weird looking Pac-Man. And then one day, it just showed up on Sega Channel, booted it up. I was addicted immediately, and that's partly why I bought the Game Boy Advance Pac-Man collection way back when. I was like, I finally played Pac-Mania.
Me too.
Hey, my man. See?
Yeah, I still got it.
It's so good. And then he had the Pac-Man, the freaking like arcade version, which they should bring that version of Pac-Man back. Power-ups, he had boss fights.
It's, they got that on the Switch, I think. I mean, they got like all the Pac-Man. They got like giant Pac-Man on the Switch.
I mean, like a new Pac-Man. Like, make a sequel to it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, they've been trying to do that for years and they never quite get it right.
Yeah, I don't understand what they're doing. They come up with Pac-Man Battle Royale when Pac-Man Versus exists. I don't know what they're thinking there.
Pac-Man Versus needs to make a comeback, and with Charles Martinet voicing it as Mario.
Pac-Man's got the power pellet.
There you go.
It's so not so good.
Yeah.
It's so good.
That's fucking fruit. I'm pretty sure that's what he says.
That's exactly correct.
Yeah.
It was rated M for mature for exactly that reason.
Needs a remake.
Got gritty at the
Speaking
end.
Of remakes.
Oh.
Joe, go.
Haha. First game we could get right into reviews. Tim, you ready?
What? Oh, yes. I don't have the copy. All right. I cede control of the show back to you.
Okay.
First. That was horrible. That was the worst 17 minutes of my life.
Fair enough. First game to talk about tonight is Front Mission First Remake, developed by Forever Entertainment and Square Enix, published by Forever Entertainment, released November 30th on the Switch for $34.99. Discharged from the military, Royd sets out to investigate what happens to his fiance Karen. Oh no, Karen. Did she deserve it?
Neither of these. No, incredibly not.
His quest, Karen, leads him closer and closer to the conspiracy behind the incident and powers that orchestrated it. With dozens of characters to meet, its mature story and I don't know. Front Mission is the classic of tactical JRPG genre, finally available worldwide. Tim, tell us about your time with Front Mission First Remake.
All right. So first of all, this is a remake of a remake, because the original Front Mission was a Super Nintendo game. And then it was, got a PlayStation released where they added a campaign where you play. There's two opposing sides in this game. And there's a campaign featuring each side to flesh out the story and the characters and all that's going on. This is a game where your characters are piloting mechs called Hwanzers, and you go into tactical tile-based battles and duke it out. And in between the levels, you can customize your Hwanzers and talk to NPCs and stuff around the different bases and cities that you're in. That's the general gist of it. It's one of those games. There's been a lot of those games this year. You know, there's been a lot of tactics games this year, which is kind of awesome, but also it's a unusually flooded market. And also, speaking of things that come out next month, there's a new Fire Emblem coming out next month as well.
Shit, I forgot about that.
Yeah, that comes out the week before Callisto Protocol, or not Callisto Protocol, the game that Callisto Protocol was ripping off. the remake of that game, anyways. I mean, by their own admission, come on now. Anyways.
Find out our thoughts about the Callisto Protocol next episode.
Oh, someone's got it.
Hockey.
Oh, man, I'm looking forward to that review.
Yeah. What the heck was I gonna say? Yeah, anyway, so yeah, that's the basis of this game. There's been quite a few games this year. There's a lot of competition in the market. So how's this remake stand up against like all that's out there right now? Well, the graphics are pretty solid. They look good. You have full control of the camera to move around the battlefield and twist and turn around. It's not locked to a 3/4 perspective though. There is a rearranged soundtrack and the original soundtrack. You can switch between them. They both sound great. There's some Yoko Shimomura on there. So go figure. It sounds fantastic. The kind of the only beef I has is like when you're in battle, like it will. The first thing I did in the game was like turn off the animations of your characters moving and the battle animations because they just take too damn long. And so like it'll be switching back between like different music tracks like faster than I can enjoy them. Music's still great. I just wish I could like really sink into it more when the battle. So that's more of a me problem. The game has a, you know, the story of what's going on, the conspiracy and such is super interesting and I think very well told. The issues with this game, and they're not backbreaking, but they do hurt, and they come twofold. This is a remake of a game that is over 25 years old, closing in on 30 years old. Holy shit. And there's not a lot they've done to, like, modernize it. They didn't, like, shine it up at all. So it's like they put you in the game. They give you, like, the very basics of combat. But they don't really go in depth with the tutorials. It's not over-tutorialed, but I would say it is under-tutorialed because, like, once you get going, I'm just kind of like, I feel like I should have, like, slightly more information going in here. The battles themselves can be kind of a slog. Your weapons have a hit percentage, but there's a lot of missing. There's a lot of missing, and that's going back and forth between you and the enemy, which can just make things like really drag out. Every Wanzer out on the field. Yeah. Your team and the other squad, like they have individual parts that can be damaged and have their health drained down and broken individually, which is the legs, the arms, that's two different ones are the arms, left arm and right arm, and the body. But you can't like target them. So a spray of bullets from your gun might just kind of go bah, bah, and hit like one thing or two things or three things or no thing sometimes, despite how high the hit percentage might be, which could be frustrating because sometimes when a Wanzer can lose their arms, they can lose their legs. But if the body is destroyed, then the whole thing blows up. The whole thing goes with the body being destroyed. So it's like you get in these situations where like there's a few hit points left on the body, but you just can't fucking hit the thing no matter what you do. You're like hitting other parts, you're missing, and you're just like, oh my God, this is just making things take forever. And then like the enemy team is doing well with their hits. So then it's like, oh God, I got to heal my guys so they're not blowing up. If the aforementioned Royd, which is spelled R-O-Y-D, it's not quite as like weird when read in the game. If he dies, like mission fail. It's one of those. Like if his mech goes down in the mission failed. And they don't tell you that. Again, no tutorial. And so it was a surprise to me because the other guys, they can go down and you just pay a fee to repair their mech after battle. It's not like Fire Emblem and they're dead forever. But like if he goes down, battle over. Got to start from the beginning, which really hurt on the first time that happened because I was really deep in a battle and he just kind of took a random huge shot to the body from an enemy at the very end of the battle. And I had to redo the whole thing.
Oh.
That's a bummer. It is a bummer. It just feels like you should be able to target things with your guns. One of the cool things is and this goes both ways again, when like an enemy unit attacks your units, you have an option of picking to block or use one of your weapons to defend yourself. But when you're making that decision, you can't like look, you don't see, it doesn't show you the health readout of the enemy. So you can make an educated decision as to whether like, well, I need to just defend or like, oh, this guy's really low on health. Maybe I should just shoot them and get this over with. That's a bummer. The menus when you're out of battle don't always present you the information in like the clearest way, like when, because there's a lot, and this is something that I really like about the game. When you're outside of battle, you can get really in the weeds, customizing your mechs, equipping different like parts, different legs, different bodies, different arms, different weapons. Weapons go like, you can have a different weapon in each hand, you can put weapons on each shoulder. These are kind of restricted by the weight of the body, the legs, like the whole loadout. But sometimes like actually like looking at the inventory of what you have already purchased, and it could be smoother, I guess I'll just say that much. It's hard to get all the information you need all at once, but it is really fun when you're outside of the battles to sit there and get in the weeds and be like, okay, well, how am I going to spec out this mech? Like, what am I going to, you know, what arms am I going to put on it? What, legs, what weapons, how am I going to sit there and just think about it? And they give you like, they're pretty generous with the money between missions. So you can sit down and like spend quite a bit of time just kind of going through and figuring it out. And that's good stuff. But kind of overall, the game ends up, you know, it's tough to give it a full-throated recommendation in the year of 2022 when there has been just so many tactics games. And even, you know, within the last month, the Tactics Ogre remake came out a month ago, and is by all, you know, it just got a superior game just overall. There's just been tons of games. There's been Triangle Strategy. There was like what the Dio Field Chronicles. It feels like so many Nintendo Directs have just been littered with tile-based tactics games.
And that Advance Wars Square remake. Square games.
Yeah, so many of them are Square. They did this to themselves.
They did.
that Advance Wars remake might come out eventually. We'll see.
Who knows?
It's fight.
Let's ask the question this way. As a remake, is this mission accomplished?
It's mission okay-plished. it's solid. Like, if you want to play front mission, this is a totally, this is a absolutely rock solid way to do that on modern platforms, like, no doubt. I'm not disrecommending the game. In our, you know, terminology of this show, it would be a try it. It is not like, I don't think it is the best tactics game available for you in, you know, right now on
fucking
the market.
Yeah,
there is definitely some things that hold it back compared to modern games in general, but it's not like a failure at all. It runs well. It has really strong parts of the experience. I just kind of wish they had done a little bit of shining up in the battles just to make them go smoother and feel like, you know, you have more control over the combat and like how you're engaging enemies rather than just this sort of weird random fucking clown show where you're just like, you and the enemy squad are just missing each other over and over again, and there's just like two of them left, and it's just like, come on, let's just get this over with.
Is it like, know, the Naked Gun where Drebin's on one side and the bad guy's on the other and they're just completely missing, then they throw the guns at each other and
like stormtroopers shooting at stormtroopers, you know, it gets a little absurd sometimes, but it's a solid remake. It's not worth your time if you're looking to get into front mission. I just wish they'd shine it up a little bit more.
Cool. Also cool. Vertically Impaired coming by and giving No Time a sub. Tony, thank you so much for coming in here, dropping a sub. Love seeing you in here. Always good having you. I know you're subbed for a ridiculously long time yourself. So anyway, moving on. Next game is Cuckoo's Lost Pets, developed by Petite Fabric, published by Modus Games, released December 6th on Switch and PS4 for $29.99, coming in 2023 to Xbox One, Series X and S, and PS5. Welcome to the world of the Cuckoos. On a planet covered in water, the Cuckoos live on an island that is home to the Cuckoo Tree. After an experiment where the Cuckoos attempted to make their pets more obedient goes haywire, it is up to the Cuckoos to find their newly aggressive pets and regain control. Chris, what is going on in Cuckoo's Lost Pets?
Okay, so Cuckoo's Lost Pets is a little bit of a rarity. So we've talked about a lot of games that come from Brazil before.
Brazil.
Yeah, Brazil. And, you know, typically they're kind of like, you know, we've had a lot of like throwback kind of retro games and stuff like that. But this is actually a very modern, not quite AAA, but let's call it like a fully fledged like modern game. And it's one that seems to be aimed squarely at the younger set. So it's like it's real interesting in that way. They're definitely taking cues from like a Mario and new Mario and like Crash Bandicoot and stuff like that. You know, it's so this is a 3D level based, like kind of it's 3D, but it's also like kind of done in scenes, like you don't control the camera, for instance. So when you move to a new area, like the camera will go to a position where you kind of know, oh, this is where I can go. And if I start moving in this other direction, the camera is going to kind of point at something else.
Are the levels more linear or are they more open, like, say, Bob-omb Battlefield?
They're not
just kind of run around, do what you want.
It's not, yeah, they're not totally open. However, they do have branching paths and alternate paths and rewards for doing so, because you are collecting friendly flowers, literally spelled friendly. And those flowers will come into a, they're collectible, basically. But it's not quite a collect-a-thon. There's only the friendly flowers, the coins, and enemies are counted at the end of the stage, and you can actually surpass, you can go over the amount that it takes to get quote unquote 100% or S rank or whatever. So they're pretty generous with it. You don't have to like search every little nook and cranny for sparklies or anything like that. Thank God. It's like Crash Bandicoot in the sense that the levels are a little contained. However, it's more Mario-like in the sense of like the exploration and particularly the combat. So your characters your characters are like these little they're recognizable when you see them. Like they're beady-eyed, rotund figures. They kind of look like Fall Guys, but better. They got cartoony faces, but like, you know, their cartoon features pop out of their faces. Like they're fully 3D. They're not like animated characters. They got beady eyes that actually have, beadness to them. So and for lack of a better word.
Life and not an empty void.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. They're lively for sure. It's very well animated, actually. And on the PS4 runs real smooth, which I'll get to in a minute. But yeah, you have your choice of four characters to begin with. Two girls, two boys.
No cups.
No cups. Jesus. And one of the boys is naked. So I don't know what that means. But they kind of look like little. They look like hacky sacks, kind of, and the boy K is possibly a monkey. We don't actually know. Again, it's a cartoon. It's very, very absurd, and in a way that I like. So, I just went straight from combat to the story. We're going to hang around in the story for a little while, then I'll get back into the combat. Okay, that's what we're going to do. So, it opens with this cutscene that plays out like a kind of Saturday morning cartoon. But it's they're doing an Olympic style competition with their pets, and that introduces you not only to the way to control things in the game, but it also introduces you to the pet feature, which is that those are basically like your power ups. Pets are absurd little creatures, like one eyed bats, like that have one wing, but if you grab two of them, then you can fly, things like that, and. It's interrupted by the king of 96.7% of the world, that is to say, all of the ocean, because the remaining 3.3% is that island that you're on. And so he comes by and on a giant robot frog, it just kind of starts eating people and stuff. And because the critters all come under control of an evil collar that is being sold initially by a corporation, and then it makes the animals evil. But anyway, the game is full of like really absurd jokes, and the voice acting, you can tell like by the accents and by just like everything else. It's like this was definitely like fully produced somewhere that's not the USA. because yeah, every character has a kind of South American accent, and it's delightful because some of the words are not quite said right, or like you know, it's, I don't know, it's charming. It's more charming than if these were like, you know, like an American voice cast, in my opinion. The jokes are silly, like the narrator stopping himself to like admire the word, oh, what was it? There's a word, anyway. But he's just like, oh, that's a fancy word. Ooh, oh, that wasn't in my script. Uh-oh. And then like, you know, kind of just like little jokes like that. One of my favorite ones is that, so this island has, you know, different doors that lead to different worlds. That's just part of the island. And of course, you have to go to these different worlds to rescue your friends. And there's several levels in each world. And in order to get to like the hub where you can go into those worlds and such, your grandma, the grandma of the island is what she's called, who has a fantastic intro to the game, which I will not spoil. It's just in the intro. She gives your character this drink in a goblet, right? And your character drinks it, and you can see like their pupils like dilate real big and stuff, and they see like this magic door that comes in. It's just got like googly eyes on it and stuff, and it's like, hey, friendly door, like, come in. I'm going to take you to a magical place. I'm happy. So your character just like, yeah, your character just like wanders into it, and it cuts to like what everyone else sees, which is just the character walking into the air, but then disappears like slowly as if, you know, walking into a door. And the grandma's like, oh, that actually worked. Who'd have thunk? She just wanted to give the kid some drugs or something, but he actually did teleport to the world like she said. I don't know. It's funny. Okay, so once you're in these worlds, like I said, the combat is running, jumping, diving into enemies, which are just regular animals that have those collars attached. When you hit them, and they like kind of do the Sonic the Hedgehog thing of like turning back into the cute animal that they used to be before the collar. So it's like, it's one of those kind of games where it's like, you really are like, you feel like you're rescuing pets. And, you know, it's got, like I said, it's got great details like that, you know, and the monsters are very, lively and interesting, and, you know, they got some variation, but then again, I haven't played all the way through the game, so I don't know, maybe they were start repeating at a certain point, who knows. And, eventually you fight through a bunch of levels, reaching goals, solving light puzzles, and then eventually you run into a boss that's like, you know, your big room-sized boss, like a modern Zelda or Mario, and then you need to move on and try to collect as much stuff as you can, which I'm gonna guess leads to unlocking characters, because there's actually 8 locked away characters on top of your 4 that you have initially, which is kind of nice. And then the big gimmick of this game is that, like I said, in stages you collect pets, which are basically power-ups. So like the first one you grab is a firefly. So with the R1 button, you let the firefly start flying around. And the thing about pets is that when you have them out, they take, if they get damaged, you get damaged. So there actually is a usage to like having them tucked away when you're not ready for them. But you use the R2 button to have that animal then use its power, which in the case of like the weird one-eyed birds, like that's the power of flying. So you get, you know, you get to like basically fly. But, you know, it's that kind of flying where it's like, you know, you don't fly in a straight line. You start coming down slowly. So, you know, you got to kind of time your jumps and stuff. And then, like, the firefly will light up certain parts of the first levels because they take place in dark caves. And, by the way, lighting effects, amazing. Like, the game actually uses, like, lighting and stuff to, like, really kind of make things look cool.
I'm sure the PS5 and Series X and S version, when those release, will look really good, too.
Yeah, I mean, it was looking great on the PS4, and that, by the way, I, you know, in reading what other people were saying about this, apparently it does suffer issues on the Switch for performance. So, while I didn't get the Switch copy on purpose, because I actually wanted to play this one on PS4, buyer beware on that one. You know, check out other reviews and gameplay footage before you dive into that one. But yeah, this is a... Like I said, I would call it a medium difficulty game for kids. Mm-hmm. Pretty
does it have
easy.
Like I have a question as someone with a child. Sure. What does it have any like difficulty adjustments? Like
no,
that's too bad. If it, I'm just looking for like you know turn off damage, you know.
Yeah. No, it doesn't have anything like that. Sadly, it is missing like. Basically all the accessibility features. What you get are volume sliders and language.
Woof. So. I mean, it looks wonderful.
Yeah. And I would, yeah, like I said, it scales up a little bit after the first couple of levels, but I mean, nothing, you know, as somebody who played Mario games and stuff, it wasn't anything that was like too bad for me, but mm-hmm. I was like, I could see this being like a little challenging for like a younger kid. Mm-hmm. You do have, you know, infinite lives. The that's checkpoints good. Are generous.
That's also good.
And there's no huge incentive to get all the collectibles. If you just want to get through the stage, you can get through the stage. So, it, you know, they did design this to be friendly.
And it has co-op. So
it does that. Have co-op, yeah. Which I didn't get to test because I don't have anybody to play co-op with.
I'm pretty sure there was someone you knew on this podcast last week.
Oh, yeah. But
now you're on the hook for all the co-op games.
Oh, yeah. We'll see.
Well, Cuckoos is sitting at $30. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, that sounds like a buy it from me. The production care has definitely gone into this game. It seems to be real good on content. Like I said, there's several levels across several worlds. The personality is absolutely there. Like I do want to get through this game myself just to see all the cutscenes because they do look ridiculous. I couldn't really find much to complain about really on this one. You know, like I said, it's just I hear it is actually it does end up being fairly short, but I don't know because the levels seem fairly long, but that's again, I'm exploring them and trying to get everything, so yeah. Like that, maybe that's the reason.
That's how I play too.
But I mean, short is not a bad thing for me.
No.
So yeah, this one will be worth your hard earned sawbucks.
All right. Next up is Inscription, developed by Daniel Mullins Games, published by Devolver Digital, released December 1st on Switch for $19.99. Inscription is an inky black card-based odyssey that blends the deck-building, roguelike, escape room style puzzles and psychological horror into a blood-laced smoothie. Darker still are the secrets inscribed upon the cards. Brunel, tell us about your time with Inscription.
This is a game that I did admittedly hear about last year on for its original PC release. I was told by someone from another venue that this was their game of 2021. And when I asked them about it, I was like, what is so special about it? And they said, I can't tell you because it's a spoiler. So it seemed kind of weird to have a person pushing me to buy I think at the time it was like $25. And I knew nothing about it except that it was a card game. And now I get a chance to review the game. So despite buying it and then not playing it because, you know, life, now I'm playing it because of a review, which happens a lot on this show, so I'm okay with that. And I am now here to be able to say that I see exactly where was coming from on that point. I can totally see this being on one of my game of the years for 2022. It counts because this is my time playing it on a recently released version of it. And I'm going to come at you with the exact same mantra, which is, this is a card game, and I'm telling you nothing else aside from what the description gave you, because that in itself is a spoiler, too, in my opinion. Because I didn't know that when I booted it up, and I feel like I would have lost something if I knew that coming in. Not that it makes it bad, but it makes it for a cool surprise. But what I will do
is I'll describe the card game. Are the card mechanics solid? I know you can't talk about story, Do the card mechanics keep you engaged through the game? Are they enjoyable card mechanics, or is it more or less like it's just there just to pull the story along?
Funny part is you would expect it to be there just to pull the story along, and it would probably be serviceable if that was the case, because they're like, you know, we're doing something special here. But the card game is fun too. It's got your typical, you know, monsters that can be summoned by using sacrificed monsters, but they do a little bit more with it in this game. So, for example, they unlock additional mechanics as you play further into the game too. So what you can do at one point may be changed later on. You might find yourself having more options. But the general concept of the game is that you can summon monsters by sacrificing other monsters. And the goal is to attack your opponent, who's on the other side of the table, by doing damage to them while they're not being guarded by another monster on the table. But these monsters also can have a variety of different bonus effects, such as, like, you know, flying abilities, which means they can attack over enemies that are on the main line. You might have a character who is one of my favorite types until you screw yourself over with them. It's the immortal cards. So, like I said earlier, you have to sometimes sacrifice monsters to summon other cards, but immortal monsters don't die when they're sacrificed. They come back on the table, which means if nothing kills them by way of attack, you can just sacrifice them ad nauseum to summon monsters that are in your deck. There's cards that evolve into better monsters if you leave them on the table for an extra turn, which I think is pretty cool because there are some monsters that are kind of dopey, but then they can evolve. But at the same time, you can transfer these effects to certain cards using certain elements on the board. Because did I say board? Yes, because it is a card game, but it also works like kind of like Slay the Spire does, in that you go from node to node on a map, and the different nodes that you can choose between when you have options provide different events on the board, such as like a shop where you can trade in pelts for special items, or you can buy said pelts, which are pretty much dud cards that you can't really do anything with until you get to a place to trade them in for better cards. You have sacrifice.
Root Beer in chat is saying that if you like Slay the Spire, you should play Inscription. They bought it on the PS4 and may buy it again on the Switch.
Yep. I honestly, even if you didn't like Slay the Spire, I think you should play this game. But Root Beer is on point with saying if you like Slay the Spire, I can't fathom why you would not like this. It's just, they go together like, you know, peas and rutabagas. So I think it's amazing. Like, it's, the mechanics feel good. The things they do with it feel good, and they're mysterious too, because again, the reason why I'm not saying anything is because just mentioning anything outside of the card game is a spoiler that I think takes away from the experience if you know about it going in. This is one of those games where I feel like you shouldn't even go on the internet and look it up, because the internet will give crap away. If you so much as type in the name Inscription nowadays, you might get some article telling you how to solve something because they want your clicks, but all they're doing is spoiling the goddamn experience for you. Well, so
then let me just ask this. $20, is it worth the money?
May I inject here for a moment? Pernell, I have news for you that might be alarming. The cards in this game are actually real animals in the world. Those are not monsters. They exist. Like, a wolf is a real thing.
Well, some of them aren't, you know, there's like weird
things. Some of them are a little weird, but most of them are in fact based on real creatures.
You might encounter them. You're telling me wolves are real?
Yeah.
Bullshit. That is not true. I've never seen a wolf in my life, which therefore means they do not exist.
Yeah. You might have your mind blown if you go to a zoo or maybe even a pet shop. I played this game.
Gerbils will blow your fucking mind.
Last year on.
There are real gerbils? Moles are real?
I played this game last year on PC, and yeah, I did go through that routine of like recommending it to people and being like, well, you can't. The less you know, kind of the better it is, which, you know, is scary for some people, especially when they hear like it's a card game and there's a run based element to it. But I will like there is the game wants you to progress, like it is run based, but there are mechanics that will gradually make you more and more overpowered as you progress, so that you will be progressing through the game. It is not a daunting thing where you're going to get.
We could probably say this, because this thing isn't a spoiler per se. It's just a mechanic. When you die, the actual "so you want to get stronger" mechanic, the game allows you to kind of build a special card out of three components from your current card. So you'll be able to take the health and power of one card, the trait ability of another card, and one last thing, which is currently eluding me.
But probably the cost, if I had to guess.
Yeah, the cost, exactly. The cost of the card. And you combine those three things into a new special card that you can then pull in future matches.
And you get one of the, like, it keeps adding one every time you fail on a run until you're just like, eventually you can get a ton. I think I don't remember how many runs in that I cleared it. It wasn't too many, but yeah, eventually you have like kind of a bunch of OP cards you can rely on showing up in your runs. And the game just has a tremendous foreboding mood to it. There is elements of the game outside of the game at the card table. I guess I'll say that there is some puzzles to solve and lore to discover. And
I didn't even want to say that.
It's right there off the bat at the beginning of the game, you know, that you can get up from the table and kind of wander around the room. But it goes interesting places and does things that, you know, I have not seen games do before, and I am super interested to see how it does some of the things that it does on the Switch. Yes, I am now the one who is vague booking. Back to Brunel.
Yes, it's. I mean, honestly, I hope people didn't hear what Tim said compared to what I said. I was like, what the hell is Purnell doing? I'm like, because honestly, Tim gave a good description, but even still, I was kind of like, oh, no, you said too much. I don't know how much I want to tell people. But it goes beyond a shadow of a doubt that this game is worth the coin. I mean, I paid, basically for me, this review is more like saying, was it worth what you paid for it last year despite having not played it until now? And the answer is, you goddamn right it is. This game is good. This game pretty much surprised me in a way that made me feel like I was getting something special out of it. It wasn't a run-of-the-mill game. It wasn't just another game to do. This was, what the fuck's going on? I've never seen anything like this before. And I'm not saying that to be hinky. I'm saying that because it's legit. Bye.
Tim, your thoughts?
Yeah, no, it's totally worth it. Not everyone is going to love it in the places that it goes. It starts out very strong, and I've seen the criticism that it is less strong in the middle of the game. But I had a blast with it. Just going, what the fuck is going on?
Sometimes they'll like write the criticisms. Do they come in retrospect? Like, now that I've beaten the game, looking back, but at the time the person gets there, still like, what the fuck? What is this?
I know some people, you know, again, I'm not going to get into details. I know some people were less enthralled when things started to shift or change. The opening is really strong. Here's a question. Do they have the endless mode in this? There was a mod they released, because the guy released the game, and then he was like, well, it turns out I don't really have any bugs to fix, so I guess I'm just going to spend my time and money developing this like extra mode where you can just endlessly play the card game.
I haven't seen anything about that yet, but that's not to say that it's not going to like patch in or something like that.
Yeah, it was a free update on the PC version, so I would assume here we are, you know, a year later, that it is. I would assume that it's just being included in the console versions, but I can't remember what the hell it was called, unfortunately. But whatever, it's worth it without it, anyways. I was just curious.
All right, well, moving on. Next game, Sword of the Vagrant, developed by OTK Games and Deco, published by Rainy Frog, released December 1st on Xbox One and Switch for $9.99. Journey into a gorgeous hand-painted fantasy world known and discover the truth about your bloodline and its darkest secret. Play as Vivian the Vagrant, a traveling sellsword who follows her lost father's research in an effort to reunite with her family. Hack and slash a path from a quiet coastal village through mysterious forests, haunted castles, and wrecked battlegrounds. When the endless barrage of enemies have been vanquished, what solace will be left for our hero? Tim, what's going on in Sword of the Vagrant?
Damn it. Sorry. I was just really quickly on Inscription. It's called Casey's Mod, and it is included in the console versions. And I just saw that someone named their custom card Thick Cock, which had the sentence appear on the screen, "With your thick cock in tow, you retreated into the woods."
I am happy that that came up.
Oh my god. All right, now I guess was also a pun. Holy shit. All right, so anyways, Sword of the Vagrant, to be confused with the game on Steam called The Vagrant, because it's actually the same thing. They renamed it, I guess, for the this. It is now this came out on PC some years ago, in 2018, and is now getting a console and Switch release. And so, yeah, if you take a glance at this game, you'd be like, is this like some Vanillaware shit? And it's not, but it looks like it. That is the most striking thing about this game to me. Vanillaware, you know, the developers of like Odin Sphere, yeah, and 13 Sentinels and Dragon's Crown, they're just known for having a very lavish two-dimensional art style. Just games that are a feast for the eyes with how the characters look. And this, you know, definitely evokes that that art style, which is a big compliment for a game that is presumably made by a much smaller team and empirically costs much less money than that. So, yeah, you are the Vagrant, Vivian the Vagrant, who also inspires memories of Vanillaware games because her clothing is mostly not there.
I was waiting how long it would take to...
Yeah, not that long. That I mean, that was the first thing I noticed in the game is like, wow, her tits are just out there. Like, my God, she's wearing like chaps and underwear. So like,
how aren't the nips out?
I mean, that's Vanillaware, baby. You look at that wizard in Dragon's Crown. You try to figure it out and tell me.
Like, where are the nipples positioned on that?
Hey, it's body? A fantasy world. Maybe they don't have nipples. Maybe the men do all the. You know, who knows? It's a fantasy world. Anyways, not important, but I guess noteworthy enough. So this is like a 2D. Action RPG deal, just strikingly like Odin Sphere, and like the map feels similar, and a lot of what's going on just feels similar, and I have to imagine very inspired by that. You'll navigate these maps, you're given various quests. This is where it just turns into like, you know, standard RPG bullshit. You know, you're exploring, you engage in combat, enemies drop loot. There are systems in place for, you have a tech tree for upgrading your character. You can upgrade your weapons. You can put runes on your weapons that give them different effects. You're going to pick up armor and accessories and other weapons and equipment that you can customize your character with. The combat itself is solid, serviceable. It's not like a crazy 2D Devil May Cry thing going on here. But it feels decent. You have a dodge, you have a jump, you have some different combos, you have light and heavy attacks, as you are wont to do in these games. There is some cooking that you can do at campfires. Campfires also serve as save points. And doing the cooking will, along with restoring health, give you various buffs for combat ahead. It's got different difficulty levels. It's just like a really solid 2D action RPG. And I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, there, dear Joseph, it's only like $10.
Yeah, it's $9.99, which is impressive for how detailed the visuals, it can't be overstated how good this game looks design-wise.
It looks like it should cost more. Yeah. I don't know how. I mean, I guess, you know, it is a port of a game that's a few years old at this point. But don't be fooled by the low price points. Like, sometimes you see those games with a low price point and you're just like, that looks okay, but it's probably like shallow garbage because it's just, it's cheap. It's cheaply made. And I bet. I have an inkling that I'll back up in a second. This game could be on sale for a very low price. at some point, you know, when they have sales going. But yeah, no, it is a robust, lengthy RPG with some solid combat. Like the frame rate, I guess the smoothness of your character moving around is not always the best, but you know, it doesn't look bad. It's not like hitching up. Like there's plenty of ground to cover. I mean, I guess the combat can get a little repetitive sometimes. I remember there's one screen where it was like, cause it'll put up like little, barriers on either side of your character when you enter a combat. It's like, okay, I beat all the enemies, and then I moved like a screen over and it put barriers up again and dropped in like a very similar mob, and I'm just kind of like, okay, game, like seriously, like why, what are we doing here?
Is it because you were running? I think when you run into more enemies, but if you're walking you don't get as many battles.
You're just getting to the battles faster if you're running, Joe, come on. Obviously. But it doesn't matter, because yeah, this
like game my one minor issue. I wish the walking speed was faster.
Yeah, I know. I was, as soon as I found running, I'm like, well, this is what I'm doing for the rest of my life in this game. But yeah, it is very well priced, I feel like, at only $10, and well worth a purchase if you're looking for a game like this. The only reason I would say not to is because the PC version is like currently on sale for 79 cents.
Holy shit!
And is normally like $4, it looks like, something like, maybe it's I can't quite tell. I think it's a little bit more than that. No, it looks like a $3. Yeah, I don't know. Either way, this game is cheaper, is exceedingly cheap on PC, which leads me that like it might also end up being exceedingly cheap on consoles and as well, if $10 is too steep for you, which I think is a totally fair price. But you know, in the interest of cost saving, you know, being mindful of what's out there in the world, like, yeah, it's 79 cents on Steam right now for The Vagrant. So, but either way,
I wonder if it's the same game, if The Vagrant is the same as Sword of the Vagrant.
No, it is.
Is it?
Yeah, it is.
So, ultimately, it is definitely a good game, because I was eyeballing that one on the store recently, too, but I wasn't sure what to make of it. And the Joe was like, Tim's reviewing it. So, I was like, well, I'll wait for Tim.
It's
$10. So support Rainy Frog and pick up a cool VanillaWare style action RPG.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, Tim, that is it for you.
If it was more expensive, I guess I would be a bit more critical of it, but it's hard to, you know, raise a hand. It's like, oh, $10. No, it's totally solid for that price. Yeah. But yeah.
It's definitely, it's about half the cost of what I thought it would be.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep.
So rock on. Always good to see affordable games come out, and I think that deserves some recognition.
Yeah, absolutely. So. Yeah. Alrighty. Well, I'm gonna get myself to bed.
Righty. How was it being show owner for like 15 minutes?
It was all right.
Was it
okay? Yeah.
Did you fire anyone? Do I have any paperwork I have to take care of?
I didn't feel as electrified with power as I expected. turns out I've also, you know, run podcasts, so it just kind of felt like that. And I'm just like, I don't want to do this on another show right now. No, not at all. I got my own shit I got to organize for the end of the year, which I'll plug at some point once I'm pretty sure it's going to be the 23rd.
Nice. Well, live stream. Our end of year show is going to be on the 15th, and then we will be wrapping up for about a month. I want to take a nice break. I want to enjoy the holidays. Yeah. I want to enjoy MAGFest, and then we'll come back strong in 23 and continue to not do anything of worth.
There's some worth. There's value. Just people just don't know it. This is really funny. Okay. Yeah. So,
we're going to make them know it.
Cool. Yeah. Any final words?
Nope, not at all. All right, I'll catch you later. Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Next up is Railbound, developed by Afterburn, published by 7Levels, released December 1st on Switch for $12.99. I think this has my favorite opening line I've ever seen in a write-up. Bend rails to make the trains go choo-choo. Connect and sever railways across different landscapes and help everyone reach their home. Solve over 150 clever puzzles ranging from gentle slopes to twisted passageways. Chris, did you make trains go choo-choo?
Yes. The trains went choo-choo on my watch.
Yay.
Up to a point.
$12.99. What's your verdict?
I mean, heck.
Okay, what is Railbound? Tell us about it.
Okay, yeah. Okay, so Railbound is very clearly a mobile type game because it has the like touch icons on the side of the screen, which are there like even when you're playing it in docked mode. But they do have the buttons next to them, so it's not. But I could tell, I'm like, without even looking, I'm like, okay, this definitely had to have started as a mobile game, right? But anyways, this is a puzzle game where you get to lay down some tracks, and not in the, you know, not in the rapper kind of way.
Yeah.
You get to lay down some railroad tracks to create a path for the cars of a train to be attached to the train so that it can leave and go somewhere. So the kind of general kind of gist of it is that you start a stage, you got your cars that are just sitting on this isolated single square of track, and you know, it could be one, two, three cars, all kinds, and they're numbered, and you basically have a set amount of pieces that you can of track that you can lay down, and the it's not only that you need to get the cars to the train efficiently because you're limited on the amount of tracks that you have. There's also a bit of a timing element because you need to put the cars in order. So if the one car, you know, if you just make a straight line from the one car to the train, and then you make a straight line from the two car to the train, but the two car is closer to the train, then you're going to mess up because that two car is going to get to the train before the one car. So it's very strategic. But the cool thing is that, you know, you can sit there and just lay the tracks as you like and take away the tracks as well and just experiment. And, you know, you press the Y button to get the cars to move. If they don't make it, then you just push the B button and try, you know, changing something, press the Y button. You know, you can crash the cars as much as you like, which is going to which is going to give us at least one customer in the Adams family.
Nice.
Yeah, callback to the actually, I guess it's not a callback since it's a modern thing, but I haven't seen the show yet, so whatever. Anyways, but yeah, you can crash train cars all day if you like. So the interesting thing about this game, because I mean that's pretty much it. I mean I got quite a few levels in, but it never really deviated from those two elements, and that's enough. I mean, it's challenging when you get into it. But the interesting thing is that the level path is really cool because so you start off you're kind of like going across a map, so like the levels are kind of weirdly branched out, like kind of sporadically and stuff. But this kind of does have a point to it because, like, basically, you know, you get to like level two, let's say, and you know, you got a branching path that's going like 2-1, 2-2, 2-3, 2-4, 2-5. You know, that's the path throughout the levels. Those are the basic levels. However, once you get to level 2-3, you could back out to the map and go down the path of 2-3A and 2-3B. Now, what those are much harder variations on the same level that you just beat. So, while it's not true for every single level, it's true for quite a lot, is that they'll give you like a kind of light to medium challenge in the proper level, the one that will get you to the end of the game. But optionally, you can branch off this path and go down a much more difficult path, obviously for just for kicks, you know?
Yeah.
It's a video game, it's fun. But I like that they don't force you to do the super hard levels to progress. But I will also say that I did get pretty thoroughly stumped before the end of the second set of levels. So, I've been working on the railroad all the live long day. But it does ramp up quite a bit after the first couple dozen levels or so. But and then it has 150 levels in here, and I checked, they're all there. So. Quite a lot to chew on here.
Well, it's $13. What do you say?
$13 if you are a brain teaser kind of person who really likes these kind of, you know, oppressive puzzles, you know, like you only get the exact amount of pieces that you need to like get through the thing. And it's more figuring it out than kind of doing your own thing, you know. If those are your type of thing, this is great, and it's definitely a buy it. If you're easily frustrated by, you know, just why can't I get this thing to go, you know, like that kind of stuff, then yeah, this one will quickly become frustrating for you. So I would say difficulty averse, beware. But folks who really do like to train their brains, this one, you got a lot to chew on this one, because it's challenging.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. Next up, I am excited about this one. This game's a lot of fun in my eyes. I'm excited to hear what you have to say about it, Purnell. Terror of Hemosaurus, developed by Lauren Lemke, published by Digirati, released December 7th on PS4 and PS5, December 9th on Xbox One Series X and S for $14.99, coming January 12th to the Switch. Earth is on the brink of a climate catastrophe. The Church of the Holy Lizard hatches a dubious plan to save humanity from its own reckless disregard of the planet. Unleash a monster to kill, destroy, and inflict terror. Sounds simple, right, Purnell?
Oh, it does, and it is, and there's nothing wrong with that. So, it's kind of funny, running a trend, this is another game. Both games this episode were games that were like, yeah, you'll love this, Purnell, but they were from Steam, and now I get to play their console equivalents. And I'm not disappointed with this one either, so Matt, if you're listening, SML, you were right. This game is actually a solid bit of fun. At its core, it is pretty much like an updated variant of Rampage, but with adorable graphics that belie some very, very violent gameplay. You play as one of a number of selectable, you know, monsters fresh from a thawed iceberg, or glacier rather, and you are tasked by the Shepherd of the Holy Lizard to destroy as much as possible to inflict terror on mankind to save them from themselves, as they're, you know, hurdle towards climate change is why the monster you control was existent in the first place. So typically you'll want to play the story mode. There is an endless mode as well, but the story mode is where all the ridiculous humor and writing is. Gameplay consists of going from stage to stage in a linear fashion with your Hemosaur going from the left side of the screen to the right side of the screen. Though on each stage, one of the church members will give you some sort of weird goal. It's not just a simple matter of the normal method of gameplay. I'll describe what the goals are in a second. But the actual gameplay consists of you walking around. You have a few control functions. You can punch, and you don't have to rapidly mash the button like you do on arcade version of Rampage. In this game, you can just hold down the punch button, and you'll just mash to your heart's content. You can use your punch button or punch action to destroy objects on the stage, whether it be road signs, diners, skyscrapers, police stations, you name it. If it's a building, it won't be much longer with your fists flying. You can use your kick button to literally punt humans across the ground or straight into the sky, because you can kind of direct the kicks to where you want them to go. And it's kind of fun to watch yourself kick a human into a volley of other humans and get a combo bonus. Or even better, aim for people hanging out the windows and knock them out the windows as well, also for a combo bonus. You'll take on a lot of damage as you're playing the game, because the police will be shooting at you. Eventually, the military will be coming after you and what have you. So you might want to fancy yourself a snack. And by pressing the B button, you can eat humans, and that will heal your dinosaur monster back a little bit of their health.
Primal Rage style.
That's right. There's also, you know, the conventional butt bounce. You can jump in the air, come down, and mash the ground. If you do it from a high top of a building, you'll get, you know, a much greater impact on the ground, sometimes destroying buildings, but always smashing bodies. And I guess the other thing I didn't mention is you can actually pick people up and throw them too. You don't have to just kick them. You can actually pick them up, carry them around, and then lob them. Now, at the surface, the game is typically destroy as much as possible, eat as much as possible. But on the stages, the goals can vary amongst a number of weird things. It might be something simple like destroy as many buildings as possible, or the majority of the stage. So like maybe I'll say destroy 80% of the buildings and maybe kill 500 civilians. But then it gets a little ridiculous, like throw someone in the air and then throw another person into them so they explode in the sky. or throw a person into at least seven different people before the combo ends. So it's like throw a guy, boom, 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 seven, and it'll show you like seven hit combo. One of my favorite ones is to throw people into the spinning blades of helicopters as they are flying overhead.
Yeah,
so,
buddy.
And it's weird, too, because on one hand, like I was saying earlier in the review, the game's not complicated. The controls are really simple. Even if you factor in the ultimate move you can unlock to do, the game's controls and actions are pretty simple. With that said, though, it doesn't make it any less fun. I genuinely do find myself just wrecking shop in town or city or, you know, rural outlet, just seeing how much chaos I can cause.
Like, I knew I was in for a good time with this game when the monster goes to the first town and the civilian is like, holy shit, what the fuck is that?
Yeah, the writing of this game, they don't mince words, both on their general language and also the message they're conveying with the game.
This is M-rated, so enjoy the violence and the language and the carnage. Ah, carnage in chat.
Like, and it's kind of funny too, because I'm playing the game, and for the most part, they're outright saying, like, people are fucking stupid. They caused all of this. Like, humans did this. And I'm sitting there thinking, like, yeah, they're not wrong. I'm still enjoying the game too, so it balances out.
I got one of the endings, and I don't know, like, it's going to be the most common ending. It's the bad ending, obviously. I don't want to give it away, but it's hilarious. Everything in this game is just fucking hilarious.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. And I like the graphical style. And they don't even, honestly, this is an equal opportunity event, you know, violent spectacle. Like, it's always going to see, like, a bunch of people being destroyed, getting smashed out of buildings, and the person in the wheelchair, like, frantically rolling themselves away. Like, no, you ain't getting away either. Come here, I'm hungry. He does not care. Women, children, you know, men, women, children, handicapped, doesn't matter. They all have to die from the Humasaurus. That's right.
If you find the rotund ones, nutrition. I was going to say, they give you bonus to health and rage.
It's just good. I love it. Look for me.
Just chow down. No,
I don't know. I mean, the guy said it himself, that they're padded with extra special nutrients for the Humasaur.
Yeah. You know? Terror of Humasaurus is $15. What are your thoughts?
I also think this is a solid buy. Don't go looking for something deep. Just go looking for something that's ridiculous and fun.
Cool.
Nice.
One final game to talk about tonight is called Pretty Girls 2048 Strike, developed and published by Zoo Corporation, released December 1st on Steam for $6.99. The Pretty Girl series now includes 2048 Slide Puzzle. This is a strategic 2048 number game where you combine number blocks to create larger number blocks and defeat your enemies by hitting them with those number blocks. Chris, what is going on in Pretty Girls 2048 Strike?
Oh my god, 2048 Strike. So, this is the latest in the Pretty Girl series. I've covered like 30 of them now. They're about to surpass Chemco RPGs, I think, in terms of like what I've like talked about here and just amassed. By the way, I actually bought three of the Chemco RPGs on sale that I had reviewed on Windows, but I bought them on Switch, so I'm going nuts.
By the way, this Pretty Girls 2048 Strike is the 19th title in the series.
There you go. Yeah. So I'm pretty sure I've at least done half of them by now, if in all seriousness.
Naki's probably done the other half.
Right. So the way that these games go is that you, it's usually a classic puzzle style game, usually something that you're going to recognize. And, you know, it's just done through the filter of having real, real busty anime style girls, usually kind of themed after something. And you play through the game and you get points that you can then spend to unlock a wardrobe, backgrounds, you know, create little dioramas with the characters and stuff like that. It's fun. Usually, the way these reviews go for me is that the girls are very secondary to the gameplay. And I don't just mean that to be like, I'm not a fan of, you know, busty anime girls. It's that they really are just kind of just there.
No.
You know, they don't really factor into anything except to say it's the Pretty Girls version of this game. Okay, so this is the first game, I think, in the entire series where I'm like, this is one of the greatest puzzle games I've ever played in my life.
Really?
Yeah, I've been playing. I've crossed hour 8 on this, and which is a little bit more than the other games that I've played in this review, and it was not expected. I was just jamming this during work. I've actually beaten it. I beat all the levels. I got all the achievements except for 3, which are ludicrous. This is not for achievement hunters. The last 3 achievements will keep you out. But I'm going to describe this gameplay, and then I'm going to describe how the girls actually do factor into it. They actually have a use. It's amazing.
What do they do?
Well,
you'll get
so
to that.
Here's, I will get to that. Indeed, I wasn't even going to fret. It's all part of the plan. Okay, so this game is divided into 2 different types of gameplay. There's stages and endless. We're going to be talking about the stages. So in a stage, you have a 25 square grid, a 5x5, and there is one tile is a girl. She's the enemy, and there could be more than one. But you know, there's like one character that you're kind of like faced against. And then there's your girl who is in control of the board. And there's a number tile. Every time you push a directional button, it will scoot every tile to the end as far as it will go, to the wall of the playing field. And then it will pop another number into play, somewhere random. And the way it goes is that if let's say there's a girl character tile and then like a 2 on the left side, and you move all of the tiles to the right, then that 2 is going to do 2 damage to the girl if it's like on the left side of her, because it's falling on her essentially, you know? Or if like a 4 is above her, when you slam down, it's going to do 4 damage. Now, the key here is to combine the number tiles as they appear. So if another 2 appears on the board and you slam your 2 into that 2, that now becomes a 4. 2 4s become an 8, 2 8s become a 16. It goes up exponentially. And, you know, as you're getting like 16, 32, 64, 128, you're doing that much damage if that new tile gets, gets aligned properly with the enemy tile. So the thing is, since every single turn creates a new tile, if you're not combining tiles, you're eventually going to fill up the board. And when the board is filled up where no more tiles can be moved, that's game over.
Sounds so, like a much improved version of that one really addictive game you took. It was like 2048. That was big a couple years ago.
That's exactly what this is. But with Pretty called, Girls.
It's called Pretty Girls 2048, so you are exactly right.
Oh, well, there we go.
I don't know what came first. Was it 2048 or was it threes?
I have no idea, because I did not know about 2048 before I played this game, and I wish I did, because I am a huge fan, like most people aren't, of the sliding puzzle games, like the 1 through 15 on a 4x4, and you like try to align them like in the right order, or put together a picture or something. I love those games. This is a much zippier, faster version that, you know, you can either strategize, or you can like, you know, just go nuts and just keep moving stuff on the board. It just keeps combining and you're just like going, you know, just kind of spacing out and just like, you know, I've done both. But here's the thing. As you go through the stages, the girls go from having like 300 hit points to 1,000 hit points to 10,000 hit points to 100,000 hit points. So you actually have to really get into creating those big number tiles. And of course, the more big number tiles there are on the board, the less you're able to combine them, because, you know, a 128 block's not going to pop into that screen. It's usually 2s or 4s.
Yeah.
You got to like be on your game of like constantly creating larger numbers, and, you know, trying to make a second larger number so that you can combine them. And not only is that going to do more damage, it's going to create more space on the board so that you have more chances to defeat these hot and sexy girls. Okay, so that is the gameplay, basically. Now, the twist that this enters in, and this is where the girls come in, You have four girls to choose from. I know that seems pretty light, but I mean, if you combine them with the enemy girls, that's the usual kind of 10 girls per game that you usually get. Some of them apparently are from other games. I never remember these girls, so I'm taking their word for it. But each girl will actually have a special skill that they can use. So while you're combining numbers, every time you combine one, your skill meter goes up. And when your skill meter hits 100, you get to use a special skill. And this is where the selection of your girl is crucial, because they each have a very wildly different special move that they can do. And in the later levels, this will make or break your game. So Sarah, the default character, has shuffle, which rearranges the placement of blocks. So if you're kind of stuck, use the shuffle and, you know, you're taking your chances. And it might align the, you know, the blocks to where it might be in a more favorable position to do some damage, or, you know, it'll line them up to where they're, you know, easier to combine something. It's a good little lifesaver. Chikage, the ninja who does not look like she could do very many backflips comfortably, has a just a straight up damage. She does damage that is equal to the largest number on a block. So if you somehow manage to get like 1024 block or something like that, then every time you fill up that skill, she can do 1024 damage to every girl on the board. And then Hataru does this is my favorite name of the group, Hataru. does random merge, which will actually combine two tiles no matter where they are randomly. It's not as useful. I could not get my brain around that one. And then Kasumi, who is my favorite, she does the best move, which is sort. She will place every block on the board in order, in ascending order. So like the twos on top, then the fours, then the eights, you know, up to the thousands, whatever. And that makes it infinitely easy to like get, you know, right back into play and like, you know, be able to arrange stuff.
A cheat code, basically.
It almost is. But here's the thing, though. Like I said, I beat this game in that last level. I'm not going to spoil what happens, but you need like that level of like a skill. And it took hours to get through that one. But anyways, so here's the thing, though, is that when you're playing this game, the enemy girls, who are kind of just fashioned after like general monster girls, you know, unicorn girl, a Cerberus girl, things like that. You know, it's just like they just look like they're kind of cosplaying monsters. It's very cute. And actually, I would say in the pretty girls canon, this is one of the more like, I would say, fleshy games. That is to say, it's not quite, you know, there's no nudity in it at all, but there's as close as you can get in this style of game, I guess. So there's your pervert.
So that's there with Sword of the Vagrant this week.
Yeah, exactly. It is. Yeah, it's that. Anyways. I was just going to say, like, all the monster girls have their own special skills too, and they can call the other monster girls that you've already defeated and fill up the board with them kind of thing. So, like, nice. That's an element that goes into it too. Anyways, go ahead.
Anyway, the game is $7. What are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, if you're going to buy, like, one pretty girls game, this is it. Like, I absolutely love this game. This is one of the ones I will not be deleting from my Steam as soon as I'm done with this review.
And I'm guessing even though, like I said, check this out on the Switch when that one makes it over.
Sure, yeah. I mean, you know, and it, maybe it'll end up on one of those Switch compilations where there actually is nudity.
I don't think Nintendo's allowing them anymore.
I think they can't help it if it's a physical. I think there's nothing they can do about that.
I don't know. I remember the reason, like, that happening, the uncensored cart, is, like, the reason they're cracking down on things now.
Oh, I thought it was because, like, every other week there's a game called Hentai that comes out that doesn't actually have any in it.
Oh.
But we got, yeah. Anyway, whatever. I don't know, but they, you know, they're selling that first set, so. Anyway, yeah, no, this is easily the best pretty girls game, and I love it. And yeah, I want another 2048 game.
Sounds good. All right. That's it for this episode. Made it through.
I will one of our shortest in a while, which is not bad.
And
I
it know could, you're it like, could have been shorter if you guys were a little fucking quicker. No.
Guess what? Too bad.
I know.
Too bad.
It's Tim's fault. He ran the show this episode.
That's right. We can blame Tim this time.
So it's totally his fault. music. I'll play something from Pac-Man.
Hey.
Yeah, that's right. Pac-Man. Pac Park.
There I don't you know. Go. Do I have any Pac-Man remixes?
There's got to be a Pac Park remix out there. That thing is popular.
Those tend to be so like rare. Like I'm like with Gimmick, I actually covered Pac Attack before.
Motherfucker.